everybody, and welcome to this week's Power Up. We are a little earlier than normal, so thank you all for being here at a different time. I'm Trisha Hirschberger.
I'm Lloyd Garrett. The Alley Boom gets to squirm with us. Woohoo! This is going to be fun. Today we spoke and ran with it. This is a non-guest episode, so we get to indulge you with what we are currently playing, watching, and reading. We've had a little bit of time off to do some fun things. Who are we kidding? We just had a guest last week, which means this week we share what we're doing. And to do that, we have Amy Cassandra Martinez from Geek Bomb to don't, what is this shit? What are you?
Amy! Wait, Amy, what are you doing?
I'm just trying to make the screen.
I love it. And also, super shout out for Amy's dress. Show it off, girl.
Thank you.
Oh, is that a solar system or is that just a cult? Like,
both?
A spinning circle.
It's a Forever 21 dress from 2013, so.
Hey!
But it is very Halloween-y, and I appreciate it.
Are we all in dresses so. Today?
I am.
I mean, I'm wearing sweatpants, but.
Yeah, are we doing a mini fashion? I'm wearing my Wonder Woman office dress because Nate and I are going out to dinner for our fifth anniversary. And when I say going out to dinner, I mean trying for the first time since quarantine started to find outdoor dining that seems safe.
I'm like a 1950s stepwife. Cookies are on me.
Cookies are delicious. I'm down for that plan.
I'm more of a banana bread kind of gal.
All right, so we've teased this now visually twice, but here we go. Let's jump in the plane. Dun, dun, dun. Maud, I am so excited for what you are playing this week.
Yeah, look, this is a game I've been playing on and off for about 2-3 years now. It's a very masochistic type of game. If you're in a good mood, you will immediately not be. It is called Darkest Dungeon or Darkest Dungeon. And it is it's a dungeon crawler-esque type game, but in it you collect different types of fighters that have different abilities, and you are, as you can see in the top left corner, four of those characters are in a particular order, and as you go through this dungeon, you will get into combat and battles against different people as well. Turns out, my brothers both absolutely love and are obsessed with this game as well. It is notoriously hard, and they have had a competition about who can beat it. My brother Darcy, the middle child of the three, I am the youngest, he has completed it on hard or nightmare, like what are the hard one, which is nearly impossible. So I recently did a stream where I had my brother on to coach me through it. And it turns out that I was doing so many things wrong. And there was a reason why this was
Give us pro tips, Maud.
I didn't really, well, I mean, it's called Darkest Dungeon because the dungeon is quite dark. And it is very important to have particular provisions going into said dungeon, like torches. Mm-hmm. I did not know that if the torch was dim and low, that it would mean your enemies could sneak and surprise you.
Yeah, and you lose sanity.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. So I thought it would be really cool to conserve the torchlight. So like only kind of dip it up, not keep it above 75%. So I was like crawling on like a 20% and under. I'm going, this game is so hard.
Yeah. It's
my brother's face was in his hands the majority of the time that I was playing. So it's a really fun look at not only me learning about this really difficult game, but my relationship that I have with my brother, because he thinks that I'm an idiot. But the more I played the game, the more I realized I was an idiot. So,
you know what? It's the kind of game that you have to die a lot to get better at. And did you hear the news yesterday?
Darkest Dungeon 2 is coming out next year.
It's coming into early access in 2021. I could not be happier. Now, for those of you listening to this, or those of you who only tune into my Twitch channel for Power Up, my channel alerts on this channel are from Darkest Dungeon. So,
which is so ridiculous because the narrator of this game... His job
so
is
good.
To make you constantly feel miserable.
No.
So if you're in a good mood, he's like, don't forget, the creepy crawlies are out to get you. And you're like, oh, that's right.
No, see, I don't think he's out to put you in a bad mood. I think he is out to make everything seem epic. And that's 100% what he does.
oh, I thought it was like, everyone has depression. And I'm like, well, now I do.
I mean, if everybody in your party does have depression, then that would make you feel bad.
Literally. Do you know what I found out as well? So what happens, like a big component of Darkest Dungeon is your stress level. Mm-hmm. So if you open a trap and it's, if you open a chest or try to discover something and it's there's a trap there, you get stressed. If you hit your peak amount of stress, you like gain this trait. More often than not, they're negative. And it could be things like, I am paranoid, or I am, what are some other ones, Trish? You can be...
You can turn into a drunk. There's a bunch of different things that are negative effects that can come if you let your stress level get too far. But in between runs, you can relieve people's stress by sending them to the bar, sending them to the brothel, sending them to the church. And it depends what type of character they are, which one of those things de-stresses them. And there's some fighters who operate well under stress.
Yeah.
And so you just, it's hard. Like, I've done a run where I had one stress guy in the party. So it's like, well, you want to let your torch diminish and stuff for that guy, then it screws the rest of your party. But I imagine if you made a whole party of people that operate super well under stress, that would be a really cool run to do.
I found out, though, that one of the things that you can get from stress is automatonophobia. And that is what I have. And that is the fear of something that is not real coming to life.
Ooh.
And so I thought that was really interesting because my brothers have spreadsheets. My brothers are the type of game players where they don't play and trial and error. They have to completely meticulously analyze everything. So they do trial and error and then they find out what the best partnership, team-ups, you name it, the best way to play. And then they put it in a spreadsheet and then they send it to me. But it's so interesting to see how their mind works because they are statisticians, mathematicians, and logisticians. Basically, their mind works in the complete opposite way than what mine works. Because my mind is like, wow, the graphics are really forlorning. Yeah, they're really kind of like sad and dark. Oh my gosh, the narrator, his voice. And so I look at all the creative sides of the game, whether I like the storytelling, whether the rules are simple, whether, you know, all of the oral and visual kind of stimulation that I experienced. So that's been really interesting. But what a game, huh?
What a game. Yeah, that game is amazing. And I probably fall in between you and your brothers. I I'm not a full let me play this game and write everything down and make spreadsheets person. I'm really happy that there are those people and that they post to forums and stuff in case I need help. No, thank you, because that's what I was going to say. In case I need help, I'm happy that those people are there. But I like figuring it out on my own. So with games that have permadeath, like Darkest Dungeon, I'm happy to keep trial and erroring and dying until I've kind of unlocked what my favorite version of my party is, until I figured it out for myself.
I don't have the patience for that.
And that's okay. To me, that's part of the fun of the game. If you've ever played, a great example of that is a game like Celeste, where you are definitely going to die about a bajillion times, but eventually if you keep with it, your muscle memory and your actual memory will kick in and you will beat that level, and then you will run 10 victory laps around your house because it took you so long to do it and you finally did it and now it feels so good. And yeah, I enjoy those kind of games because I feel such a sense of accomplishment when I get there, you know? But yeah, if you're certainly, it's kind of like playing story mode versus nightmare. You know what I mean? Like if you're in it for the story and you don't want to take the time to figure out the hardcore mechanics, and some games I can't figure out the hardcore mechanics. I wish I could. Like Hearthstone, there will always be infinitely better Hearthstone players than me. Even when I think, like, oh, I've got a real great deck, I'm doing well. Then I watch pros, and I'm like, I obviously have no idea what I'm doing.
Same. I hosted the Gwent tournament in Poland, and they were like, do you know about Gwent? And I'm like, I've played so much Gwent. In Witcher 3, I did all the Gwent side quests. Like, I was all about the Gwent the first run through. This time, not at all. Mm-hmm. But I, like, studied that game, and I really, really liked it. And then I watched the pros play and I was like, is this even the same game? Are they the same cards? Like, it was just so out of my depth that I was just like, I could barely understand what was happening. And I thought I had like a pretty reasonable grasp on it. So that was very confronting for me.
I feel like you would have to play that game, any game like Gwen or Hearthstone or Magic, every day for years to get to that level.
And some, do you know what that comes down to? And I would love to ask all of you, including everyone in the chat and Amy and Trish, are you the kind of person that would rather be a little bit good at a lot of things or really, really good at a little amount of things?
The first thing.
A little bit good at a lot? Same.
Yeah.
I'd rather be pretty good at a lot of things.
Yeah, I don't want someone to be like, oh, you don't understand any of this? Okay, well, let the big guys do it, you know? Like, no, I can figure it out.
I'm happy with either. Either would be great for me, I think. I'm just happy to be good at anything, whether it's a little good or a lot of good and a lot of things or a little bit of things. That's always nice. I mean, I was a kid that wasn't good at any sports, so every physical thing I tried, I failed at. So, you know, if you can find any things you're good at, I think that's a 2 thumbs up. Huzzah! All right, Amy.
Amy, what have you been playing?
So, 2 games, 1 mod. You've been part of this for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played it. I don't like Slender. It.
Slender the Arrival. I have to say that the epilogue took me 1.5 hours.
Ooh.
No, not epilogue, prelogue. Which one is it? Prologue. I got there eventually. Yeah, it took me 1.5 hours. So, that was a bummer. But once we got past that point, I was like, I'm invested now. That was my longest stream. I streamed this maybe like 2 weeks ago. And it took me a while. I played for about 4.5 hours. And basically what you're trying to do is you're a person and you're trying to find 8 notes. And while you're trying to find these 8 notes, Slenderman's trying to get you. So if you see him in frame, you need to run as quickly as you can or just like keep turning. I mean, you're just trying to outrun him in a way, but it is very immersive, and I played it in the evening, and it was so fun. My first time doing that, it was great. I guess the only issue that I have, but it's more of just me as a player, is that if he starts coming towards you, you're like, I need to turn around. You turn around, then you're like, wait, where the heck am I? And so then you're trying to go to the same place that you're trying to go, but then he's there and then you're like, wait a second. So it really makes you feel claustrophobic-y if you I found like 5 of the 8 notes on my first try, which was pretty exciting. And then they were like, hey, by them, I mean, I guess the game was like, you survived long enough. You didn't find all 8, but we'll take you to the next level. So I appreciated that. The next level, the next area was a little bit more difficult, and I'm very much stuck there. So while I'm kind of just taking a breather from that, I've been playing a lot of different ones, but I want to talk about Stranger Things 3, the game. Complete opposite. If you guys want to get into the spooky spirit of Halloween and embrace Stranger Things, I highly recommend this game. It's very 8-bit looking, but very clear. You know what you're supposed to do. You know where you're supposed to go. There's rats, you know how to kill those rats. You can change between characters, and each character kills the rats a different way. And then there's these, very much with Stranger Things 3, there's these Russians that they're the villains there, so you have to take care of them. But it's just great. It was very relaxing to just kind of make your way through everything. There's Scoops Ahoy, obviously Starcourt Mall with Scoops Ahoy in there.
Are there Demogorgons?
I haven't gotten there yet. I play this for maybe 2.5 hours, and I got pretty far. And I got to play as Nancy and Steve. Oh, it was so much fun. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely, like I said, playing a bunch of different ones, but those are the 2 that I really wanted to share. So in case you really want something super scary, you got Slender the Arrival, but if you don't want to, you know, crap your pants or anything, you got Strange. Thanks.
Okay. I love it. Thank you for that recommendation. I have a table. Go ahead.
I was going to say the fact that every single time I've asked Amy what she's been playing, and she's had more in this episode than the first 6 months of this year. So that's Super impressive. We got a gamer on our hands. Woo-hoo-hoo.
Oh, definitely. I am gaming every single day one way or another. I'm on level 600 something on one of my phone games.
Fantastic. I love hearing that. Sorry, Trish, what are you playing? What's this one?
I have a tabletop game this week. Video game wise, I'm still obsessed with Baldur's Gate 3, and I think that's going to be the case for a little bit.
I had to restart Baldur's Gate.
Why?
Because right at the start, I forgot to build my team with the fighter, the tank.
There isn't really a tank that I've encountered so far in this game.
Githyanki? I didn't get the Githyanki. And so
Lyzelle.
Yes.
Yeah, because she's a super B word. So
yeah,
I got mad at her and I sent her to my camp. She is grounded at my camp. So that way I'm like, if I need a fighter at some point, but I don't know how long she'll stay there.
Fighter at some point.
You're farther than me.
I went to the goblin camp and I took out 2 out of 3 of the leaders.
Nice.
And realized that my party was so bad and 2 of them were just so good at dying. So I started all over again just so I could build up my party and get the B word in my group because I think she's very, very necessary. And I changed from being a rogue to a cleric. Ooh, me.
You're a cleric?
I've never been I'm good.
Oh my
and I heal.
Gosh.
You need a healer. You need healers.
I have two. The way that I've customized 2 of my party members, they're healers. So I have that.
Okay.
I'm doing okay so far without Lyzelle, although I haven't gotten to the goblin camp yet. So we'll see how it goes.
May God have mercy on your soul. That first run that I did was, I mean, people in the chat already know, Nathan is quoting what I called my team, which is a bunch of soft fucking hot pockets. I don't know. I just yell words and that's what I called them. They were just soft hot pockets.
I love it.
Goblin kids. Like it was so many emotions, but there is like, I did a bit of an edit of all of this moment from one of my streams where I was just so defeated and I was like trying not to cry from
did
my
you,
frustration.
Please tell me you put it on Geek Bomb.
I did, I think. I put it on TikTok and it bombed. But I also, I'm pretty sure I put it on Geek Bomb. Yeah, because it's just me being like, I hate this game. Why am I doing this to myself? This game's so buggy. This game is just destroying me. And so I've started all over again and playing.
Okay. I feel like you're probably getting to play more often than me, so you'll probably lap me again, but I'll be playing it forever. But instead of talking to you about Baldur's Gate indefinitely on this show, I have a tabletop game, and not just any tabletop game. So this is the Unmatched series, the new Buffy the Vampire Slayer one. Mondo sent this to me. First of all, they sent me an email and were like, do you like Buffy? And I was like, yes, so much.
It.
I had a life-size David Boreanaz cardboard cutout in my room all through college. Yes. So anyway, they sent this. That is a true story. Yes, Maude, that is a true story. And then my junior year when I lived in the townhouses, there were 8 girls in my townhouse and 8 dudes in the townhouse next door. And they stole it from us as like a prank. And then they had a party at their house and the keg leaked and the whole, like, from his shoes up to his shins got soggy with beer. I know. And then so then he, like, shrunk. Ugh, it was so sad. It was so sad. But anyway, huge fan of Buffy. So the Unmatched series is the closest thing it reminds me of that I've played is something like a X-Wing miniatures or HeroClix, where it's more like HeroClix, I would say, where you get to pick who you want to be. You get to be Spike, Buffy, Willow, or Angel. And each of them have specific sidekicks. And
Who would you be? Everyone's your player. Choose your character.
I asked everybody on Twitter and Instagram which Buffy character they think I most like. And
Willow
was the winner. But there were a lot of votes for Buffy, which was really funny to me.
Oh. Amy, who would you be?
Well, I would pick Willow.
Yeah, you're both Willows, and it's quite obvious who I would be.
Buffy? I don't know. You also might make a good Cordy. And I had a couple write-in votes that I was Giles as well, and I was okay with Giles.
Oh, Giles, yeah.
Chat, I'm not Cordy.
Oh, mod is Spike? I like that take.
Oh god.
That's better. I prefer Spike over Cordelia.
A couple people are laughing saying mod is Spike. I don't think you're mod. I think you're missing the kind of Valley Girl-esque persona for Buffy.
Do you think she's Valley Girl-esque?
I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like she calls Mr. Pointy. And it's a, okay, like, yeah. Think about Buffy's origins. I mean,
Cordy, are you kidding me?
Cordy gets
so
awesome
Cordy should
in
not
Angel.
Be underestimated.
Cordy gets awesome.
I don't like Angel, the series.
Oh.
So I'm only going Buffy Cordy, which is, you know.
Oh, Buffy Cordy is different. That's at the beginning of her progression. To be fair, Valley Girl Buffy is also at the beginning of her progression. But yeah.
Buffy goes
away.
I like Ma. I like you being Spike. But anyway, it's got two sides to the board, so you can play two different maps. And,
is it the Hellram?
You get these little figs, so it's a fig game. So you have mini figs for everybody. So
show me Spike.
This is Willow. Let me get... Here is Spike.
Oh my god, he looks like Dresden!
We've got Buff.
That coat, he looks like Harry Dresden. Anyone?
I mean, I guess I could paint these too if I wanted to. And then Angel.
Ooh.
Nibioka is saying that Cordelia has the best arc in TV.
I mean, not gonna lie, Cordy is one of my favorite characters of all time. Like the one person on Instagram who was like, Trisha, I think you'd be Cordy. I was like, I love you. I don't think it's true, but I love you so much. I would love to be Cordy. But yeah, if you get Spike, so if you play as Spike, you also get Drusilla. If you play as Buffy, you can have Giles or Xander as your sidekick. You get to pick.
Not
if you play
Xander.
As Willow, you get Tara.
Yeah.
Not Xander.
Yeah, if you play as Willow, you get Tara. And if you
you know
play...
what? Tara or Oz? Because I would go Team Oz. Sorry, I think
no,
Oz is
Tara. Tara.
I like Seth Green, and that was cute, but like Tara.
Tara.
Seth Green was the high school boyfriend. We've moved on to the adult relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play as Angel, you get Faith.
You get Faith?
Yeah. So, right?
Faith.
Tough call. And then every character has their own deck with specialized powers specifically for that character. And anyway, it's 2 to 4 players. It looks so cool that Logan's always like, Mommy, can I play your game? And I'm like, nah, dude, it's for ages 14 plus. And so Logan started saying, I'm 14 and older. And
no.
I was like, but how many years is Logan? And he's like, 3. And I'm like, right. Not 14 plus. But good try there, buddy. I
pick my Spike voice if we're going to do this, because I just naturally assume that we'll be playing.
Oh my god, yes. Can we please play? Bye. Yes, because we can do it outside socially distanced with masks on. I'm so excited.
Listen here, Poppet. Listen here, witch.
Here, so one of Spike's powers. You ready? One of Spike's powers is, one of his cards is Bloody Hell. Of course.
Ah, Bloody Hell.
After combat, deal 1 damage to the opposing fighter, then deal an additional 1 damage for each space with a shadow token adjacent to them. And Spike's the only ones that can do shadow tokens. And Willow has, like, a special token as well for her stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm a big fan of it, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, super, super cool.
And then Drusilla would absolutely come in, then she'd make sure she could do damage too.
Killer Drusilla voice. Killer Drew voice.
Amy, your turn. Who are you again? You are a Willow as well.
I'm Willow, yeah. But I love Willow. She starts out so quiet, but then she just, she goes through so much.
She comes
but what, when she was in the first season, she would often be like this.
And you're like,
she was a little nervous.
Say the sentence.
I love
Yeah, that was, I agree with chat. Chat saying, solid Drew. Excellent Drusilla. Could not agree more. Drusilla is a character that, like, back when I was pursuing acting all the time, I'm like, ugh, I would kill to play a role like that. Like, that would just be so much fun, you know?
Yes.
Actually, not entirely dissimilar to my role on Fungeons and Flagons.
Which time?
Just this last time. I just mean in the way of like magical but aloof.
Yes.
No, yeah, that's yeah. why I said not exactly the same, but not entirely dissimilar.
I mean, as long as you felt like you got an acting little fix there, I did my job.
I did, and it was wonderful. Thank you, Maude. I don't get to do it often enough. All right, should we move? Speaking of old-fashioned acting fixes, should we move to watching?
Yeah.
Actually, Buffy's like the perfect transition to move us into watching. Here we go. What's everybody watching, Amy?
You guys, I'm still trying to recover from watching The Haunting of Bly Manor. If
By
you like...
rewatching The Haunting of Bly Manor?
Yes.
I won't watch it.
If you like
I won't watch it.
The Haunting of Bly Manor, make sure to check out our video on Geek Bomb's YouTube channel where I give you guys recommendations for if you do like The Haunting of Bly Manor. Now, here's the biggest misconception. A lot of you guys are like, nah, why? I don't want to watch it because I don't want to be scared. It's not nearly as scary as The Haunting of Hill House. It takes a massive turn to the gothic romance part of things. And, oh, it is so good. I know a lot of people's criticisms were also that it was kind of slow at the beginning. I felt like it's one of those shows that you don't have to binge if you don't want to. I didn't feel like I had to binge in order to enjoy it. I was like, you know what? I like that we're doing this. It's like a nice Sunday evening stroll where you're like, okay, let me get ready for the week. That kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And then it just starts hitting you right in the heart. And you're like, dang, this is insane. So I fell in love with all of the characters. I am watching it again because obviously knowing what happens at the end and everything that's going on, even the first few frames of the show are completely different, and Mike Flanagan does it again. I recommend it.
I should watch it because my buddy Rahul Kohli's in it, you know?
Yes.
There you go. Natslav in chat has a question for Amy. Natslav in chat says, do you need to be familiar with Hill House to watch Bly Manor, or are they completely separate stories?
Completely separate. It does show up as season 2 on IMDb. The only thing that I think transfers, well, there's a few. It's Mike Flanagan again. He's back. There's several actors that are back. They're playing completely different characters. Heck, Victoria Pedretti.
That's the same in Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story.
Horror Story.
Same sort of thing where it's like more of an anthology over the seasons. Some of the actors are returning-ish.
Yeah, I guess because the next season, I forgot what it's called, like Midnight Mass. Victoria Pedretti's
Raul's
not coming
back on as well. He got asked back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's a lot of like they're playing around with different actors and things. But yeah, I can't recommend this enough. And I think that even if you don't like horror, you will appreciate this. Mod, I think you'd actually really like this if just watch it during the day because the heart and Trisha, you too. I think both of you would really love it because it gets so sweet and it's so beautiful.
There are dolls, Amy. There are dolls.
Oh my God. No, they're tiny. That's not even a big part of it. It's not.
Okay.
I promise you.
So Ollie Morrison in chat is saying, Bly Manor's the Where's Waldo / Wally of the horror world. You spend half the time spotting hidden ghosts in the background. Is that true?
I mean, you could say that about Hill House more than Bly Manor, I would say.
We're not
they
kind of
play...
watch Hill House.
Well, no. So I don't, like, if you want that, I would watch Hill House. If you've seen Hill House and you're like, I want to see more of that, a lot of people were disappointed because it's like, it's not scary enough. But that's not what this is supposed to be. It's very much gothic romance. And when you go into gothic romance, it's way more romantic, sad, but hopeful in a way, and it teaches you things, and it's way more cathartic. And yeah, well, definitely not as many Where's Waldo. But there are a few of those, but not like, and if you don't see them, it's not going to change anything.
Well, now I'm going to look for them.
Well, oh,
I'm reading a horror
we'll have fun because
too.
Some of them are really hard to find.
Is it?
But it's not even that big of a deal.
Is it based on a true story?
It's based off of Henry James's Turn of the Screw, mixed in with a lot of other things because Turn of the Screw is just part of it.
Okay.
Where you have like someone that goes and takes care of these two kids that they've lost their parents and the kids are doing stuff. That's kind of the gist of it, but Bly Manor has so many layers, and you will fall so hard for these characters, like you don't even know. I haven't seen a show like this where I've loved all of the characters so much, and even the kids. I think that sometimes like kids get put into a position where you're like, oh, you're so annoying if you're like the bad kid or whatever, but they bring so much emotional depth to their characters that you're like, wow. Round of applause to everyone. And if you're hesitant at all, watch it during the day. Watch it during the day.
Okay. Maybe I'll give it a go during the day.
Yes. Yeah. And just take your time. Just 1 hour. That's it. Just take your time. No rush.
Okay. But yeah,
highly recommend.
I dig that.
Should we do a watch along, Trish?
Oh my God, that would be so fun.
Okay.
Yeah, let's make that happen.
I feel like this is the fourth time this video that I'm like, oh, Trisha, we should play Baldur's Gate together. Oh, Trisha, we're playing the Buffy game together. Or maybe Trisha, we could. I think I'm lonely.
It's friends. No, I'm with you, girl. Like, let's make it happen. We should definitely do it. Speaking of scary things to watch on TV, I was like, Amy is going to be so proud of me this week because I started watching a show called Evil, which I hadn't even heard of before, but I read the description and I watched the trailer and I was like, ooh, yes, but also no. And the reason I say yes, but also no is because me having the theology background that I do, especially in Roman Catholicism, like I studied Latin for 5 years. So when I watch exorcism stuff, I can translate some of that, and I grew up in a church that believes exorcisms are very real and believes all this stuff is real.
Wow.
So a lot of times I have to piece out of movies where that's the big scary because it's too real for me.
Yeah.
But I started on Evil, but I should also say, because that's the big scary, I also really am fascinated by it. And because I studied that stuff, I'm fascinated by it. So it's a love-hate relationship. It's a, like, can I just read the bullet points without all of the horror, mm-hmm. you know? So I decided to dive into Evil and did a little bit of research. So I watched the first episode and really liked the first episode. So then I did a little bit of research. This apparently is a CBS show from 2019 that was on, like, network primetime and got really good reviews. So Netflix just picked it up along with one other show from CBS that I'm forgetting what it was, just this past September to air season one on Netflix. I completely missed my radar the first time around. Are you remembering what the other show is?
Well, no, I guess this is a different one because One Day at a Time was picked up from Pop TV to go on CBS. But that's what I was saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, watch One Day at a Time.
But anyway, so I started watching this, and the basic conceit, you can see in the picture here, there's three people. So it's essentially a Ghost Hunters-esque show, except for sub-ghost with demon, or sub-ghost with some kind of spiritual thing. And the woman on the show, Kristen, is a psychologist and a non-believer. So she is there, so all three of them are hired by the church, and she is there to try to disprove that there's anything supernatural going on. The guy, Ben, who's all the way on the other side, is Muslim and is the tech guy. So he's the one who's always trying to look for some kind of practical or technological solution to the things that are going on that people are seeing and not understanding. And then, Luke Cage, bless you. Bless you.
Were so loud. They hurt.
You muted, so we don't even know. We have to believe you. STS in chat says, is Luke Cage an angel? The framing's interesting. So Luke Cage is a priest in training. And he's
that's
the believer.
Like a Halo.
Yeah. He's the believer. And so the three of them go out, and it's not necessarily a monster of the week where it's a different mystery every week or every episode. It feels like that in some regards, but a lot of them overlap and have a through line in a multi-episode arc. And it's the three of them trying to figure out, using very logical debate, whether this is something that has a supernatural element to it or not. And it could be anything from a demon possession or haunting to someone claiming to be a prophet to, it's like all different things. And to me, as someone who studied that kind of stuff, it is just fascinating. Like, their conversations are fascinating. So yes, there's some scary, scary stuff that goes down. But for me, the payoff is in the debate and the conversations and how they're kind of sleuthing everything together, at least where I am now. I think I'm 7 episodes in, but when I watch it at night, I need a palate cleanser. So we've been watching like 1 or 2 episodes of Evil and then some Schitt's Creek before bed.
Yeah.
So I have my palate cleanser before I go to sleep, because otherwise it's pretty scary. But yes, definitely spoopy for Halloween. If you want to check it out, I highly recommend, especially if you're into that kind of stuff. People have described it as like, it's on Netflix. People have described it as like Exorcist the TV show or Poltergeist the TV show. So if, so it's not as much the like jump scare or gore, like there is some of that. But it's definitely more the creepy Poltergeist Exorcist feel.
Damn, you're kind of selling it, though. You're selling it pretty well.
Dude, I'm loving it. Like, it's scary and it terrifies me. I cannot watch it right before bed. There was one night we watched it without a palate cleanser, and I had nightmares. So it cannot be the last thing that I watch. But as long as there's a palate cleanser or you watch it earlier in the day, if you're a big baby like me, you should be fine.
I love hearing that. Yay!
Yeah.
I know, for October. Maybe I should do that for October. Okay, okay.
That's good.
I just finished Lovecraft Country. So this has been a massive part of my life for the last 2 months, mainly because for 6 weeks of it, I was reading the book and exploring that for Nerdist Book Club, but it was in line with the episodes coming out on HBO Max. There are so many differences between the book and the show. They really took a creative liberty over the story that Matt Ruff, the author, wrote. Some of it I love, some of it I don't love as much, but they incorporated things like body horror and kind of changed genders with some things. With two of the major characters that have been gender swapped. One of them was supposed to be Horace and the Devil Doll. So they've changed that to Diane and the crazy stilted clawed girls. That whole curse never happened in the book. Oh, spoiling everything. But I have been enjoying this, and I was telling Nerdist Book Club last night that I learned more, like I went into Lovecraft Country not even knowing what Jim Crow law was. Mm-hmm. I thought Jim Crow was a person who made the law. Like I didn't understand any of it. And now I'm so much more educated on Jim Crow, on the civil rights movement, and even on like the Tulsa riots that happened in the 1920s. Like this was really super educational for me, learning about the American past through an African-American lens. And I think that that was really important, because that's something that the book didn't have, being written by a white guy. So I really, really enjoyed that. I think that reading the book really helped me understand the depth of the story, because it is bonkers. It is so strange. It is combining Lovecraft as a science fiction concept with Jim Crow 1950s America. And I think that kind of like piecing that together, I needed as much background and help as I could get. So reading the book was great. The finale that I just saw, none of that happened in the book. That was whole new. There's a whole character in there that doesn't necessarily really exist either. They're messing with time travel portal-esque type situations. There are now monsters that are involved with this. There are rituals and rites that are happening within this. There are potions that are in this. A lot going on. My MVP, I know that everyone thinks that Letitia fucking Lewis is the best, and she is amazing. But for me, my MVP was Ruby as a character. There was just something about Ruby. Yeah, she's just so fantastic. And the relationship and her character arc was really interesting. But I just love the fact that she was often a voice of reason and sort of like stoicism in there. And she fell in love with a woman that was trying to kill her friend. But I really enjoyed it. And it was only 10 episodes. They made us wait. But if I had to compare waiting for The Boys and waiting for this, I really enjoyed waiting for Lovecraft Country. I felt that having the episodic breakdown really helped with the storytelling and cliffhangers. Whereas with Boys, I would have loved to have just binged it and called it a day. So, but yeah, I really love Lovecraft Country. I've been hearing great things. Maybe it's a little bit too weird for some people, because there is a lot to kind of process with it all. But it's a good book. It's a great TV show. Yeah.
I've recently finished it as well. I liked it. I didn't like it as much as my husband did. I liked it. It certainly made me read up a lot about the Tulsa riots, because I didn't know that a lot of that history either, so it was really good for that. I'm not sure what it was for me. I think for me, kind of what made me not super want to jump into it is there was almost too much to understand. As someone who didn't read the books, there were a lot of things that kind of lost me, where characters would be putting stuff together that I was like, what? And then I'd have to look it up to figure out what was actually happening.
There would be like throwaway lines about this book of names or like particular things that they had to find to gain power over. And I think they rushed through it a little bit too much for it to be explained in enough detail for you to be on board. Like, I read the book and I was still like, whoa, man, that's missable. Like, that was too quick. Like, I know it, but if someone just tuned out for a second, they would be behind and it would cost them the storytelling. But yeah, I hear you on that.
I love how each episode was just like a roller coaster of like, well, let's put on our seatbelt and get in for this, you know, massive ride, because each one was so different. And it was a lot, and it was so good. Oh God, I loved it. I'm sad it's over.
I see STS2884 in chat says, I just started watching True Blood and like the murder mystery vibe. Lots of sex scenes in it, though. I will tell you, as someone who is a diehard True Blood fan until the end, even though the show was not good by the end.
The last two seasons were painful. I did a whole rewatch at the start of lockdown. I was like, because it'd been like 5 or so years, and I don't think I ever finished it. And so I saw it through, and that last season was
the
just...
The last season is just trash. It is
so bad.
It's so bad, but I wanted to acknowledge that comment to say there are a lot of sex scenes in season one. That kind of tones down as you get into, like, season two. Like, I remember season one, it was like every episode there was a graphic sex scene. And by the time you get to season two, that's not the case.
So, and this is what we spoke about on Nerdist Book Club about Lovecraft Country, because we weighed in on the show. And True Blood was doing this. Any HBO show, basically, Game of Thrones, there's a tit and butt and sex quota that I feel like they have to hit, you know? So it's like, oh, quick, we got 55 minutes of episode. How many butts do we see? How many porkings up against a wall do we get? Like, have we got graphic boob jiggle? Nope, then go back. We need more. And it's just like, it doesn't often add to the storytelling. Yeah. It's just for tonal effect because it's HBO, which is just his butt out.
Yes, I would agree.
The last few episodes of Lovecraft Country, I don't think we had that, but it was definitely like in the first half, a little something for everyone to see.
But I always liked True Blood because to me it felt like Buffy, like we were talking about earlier, but I always described it as Buffy for 30-somethings. So if you liked like the kind of feel and tone of Buffy minus the cheesy campiness, like a little cheesy campiness but less than Buffy, if you liked that feel but you wanted more graphic violence and more sex put into it, here you have True Blood. at least for the first like 4 to 5 seasons, maybe?
We saw a lot of Alcide's body. Like, we saw a lot of his body.
I told you, if I'm ever in a place where we play D&D with him, it's all I'm going to think about.
As someone who has played D&D with him, you don't.
Really?
I forgot completely. Yeah, because we were in character. My D&D character did try to sleep with him, but that's her fault, not his.
Okay.
He was just trying to make good money.
And that you were just playing the character.
Yeah. She has a side hustle.
Hilarious.
Quite literally. But good gold pieces from it. 30 GPs a night. Good gold pieces.
Woot woot. All right. Let's move it into reading. What's everybody reading this week?
I finished mine. You go first. You haven't gone first yet.
Okay. Well, mine, because I don't get to do a lot of reading in quarantine, is a book that I read a long time ago and have reread many times over the years. And it dawned on me that while I think I've referenced it on this show before, I've never actually made it my recommendation on this show. So I chose He's Just Not That Into You.
Is it something that you need to tell me?
For everyone. I think everyone who is trying to find their person should read and reread and reread this book. So the reason that I say that is, one, it's written by two Sex and the City writers, a man and a woman. And it's written very funny. So it's not going to be one of these self-help books that's incredibly serious and trying to fix your life. And, you know, like they are trying to do that, but they're also trying to make you laugh, which is great. And I think they need to make you laugh because really the message of the book is that you need to set higher standards for yourself, for anyone, men, women, whoever's dating. If your partner is into you, but they're just not that into you, don't you deserve better? Like, that's the whole point of the book. It's like, they might be into you, but they're not that into you. This and so is, it...
Okay, it, I'm sorry, but you guys are both married.
Right, so Maude, you should have this book at home.
And the movie's fun too.
No, I disagree. The movie made me so mad. Because
it's not great.
The whole point of the book is we all, because it says, you know, it's very hard to face the truth that he or she might not be that into you. So we create all these different excuses like, oh, it's not that they're not into me, that they're not calling. They must have lost my phone number. Or maybe they had a grandparent pass away and that's why they're not calling me right now. Like, we will invent crazy reasons to face anything other than maybe they're just not that into you. But the book argues, if the rule is, hey, they're just not that into you if they're not calling, which sounds like a very obvious rule, but how many of us have been in situations where we make every excuse under the sun because that can't possibly be it? They hugged me that one time.
And it's is that this week or ever? Because I've got...
Right, right. Exactly. So the point of the book is you are the rule, not the exception. And it gives you rules like they're just not that into you if they're not calling, or they're just not that into you if they're married to someone else, or they're, you know, like these things that seem like very obvious truths, like a lot of kind of self-help books that we've talked about on the show seem like very obvious truths. And then they kind of break them down for you. This book does the same thing, but with dating habits. I see Navy Ogre says, I don't appreciate you calling me out like this, Trish. Right? This is how I felt when I first read the book, because I was like, I am so called out, but I'm laughing. Like, I'm hearing these things that are a little hard to hear, but it's done in a really funny way. And honestly, from like the moment I read that book, I approached relationships differently. Like, I was like, okay, this person might be into me enough for like Netflix and chill every now and then, but are they that into me? And don't I deserve someone who's that into me? So the second you start setting your standards higher and say, well, if they're not that into me, then I'm out. The book says, you know, if someone is that into you, we all know how to chase something we want, right? A guy or a girl is not going to let their dream person walk away. They will fight for you if they're that into you. So not to say that your standards should be so high they're unattainable, but the book, like, I'm making generalizations. The book really kind of whittles it down to specifics. But I actually don't even have my copy in my house right now because I lent it to one of my friends who is having a hard time dating and don't think I ever got it back. But this is one of those books that's probably at your local library. It was not Maude. friend that I lent it to was not Maude. But I recommend everybody read this book. It 100% changed the way that I look at relationships, the way that I looked at my own role in relationships, what I deserve in relationships, what my partner deserves in a relationship. And I think it will help you not to take things so seriously. And
Creepy Falcon, imagine having the luxury of having standards.
Oh no, CP.
No.
But anyway, I recommend this book. Like I said, it's a funny, lighthearted read as well as something that I think will open your eyes. And how many times on the internet do we get people that kind of reach out looking for dating advice? I think this is not all the answers, but certainly some answers to some of the questions people ask. So that is the book that I recommend. He's Just Not That Into You. I've read it multiple times.
Yeah, no one asks me for dating advice.
That's not true.
No one asks me for dating advice.
Online ever.
Why would they?
Come on, girl.
That's like asking someone who doesn't have legs for running advice, you know? Like,
Maude Garrett, be kinder to yourself.
I'm actually reading Jim Butcher's next book in the Dresden Files series so I can escape my life and support. I don't have to think about dating because Battleground is the latest from Jim Butcher. He released two books in the space of about 2 or 3 months at the end of second half of this year. The one before it was basically prep. It was like the build up to this epic battle. I wish I had an excerpt, but I'm listening to it because Spike from Buffy is reading to me, which is the best ever. There is one particular part of this book, because I was reading it, listening to it when I was in Palm Springs, and my friend's like, what's your book about? And I was like, oh, okay. There is a, I couldn't believe I was saying this out loud. A giant Sasquatch is facing off against a Dracula-esque character. Like, they're just going for it at the moment.
Yep.
And she's like, have fun with that. And I'm like, oh, I am. And it's really, really cool. But basically, Battleground is a, you know how with campaigns in D&D, there's ebb and flow, you know, like there'll be prep for the battle and then the battle, but all battles are usually pretty quick as far as things go. This battle lasts the majority of this book. It is just one thing after another. Basically a titan, like an immortal kind of god, has decided to come to Chicago and lay wreckage to the city. And so all of these allies have to combine forces to try and fight against this titan and all of her swarms of enemies. So it's a lot of fighting that's happening. This is a series that Thierry, what book number is this one? I think this is book like 13, 16, 17. There's a lot of books in the series. But if you need a book binge, if you just don't know what to read, this series is fantastic. 16. And Thierry can attest to that because I recommended him the series, what, this time last year? And it's third listen to. So like it is that obsessive. I'm on to my second listen to in the last 3 years because I read a lot, whereas Thierry reads, I'm guessing, just the one thing at this stage. Some other books, but then returns them when they can't get past chapter 3. But this is such a fantastic book. If you love Buffy, you will love this series because it is a modern day supernatural noir-esque type detective series initially, where you follow Harry Dresden, and Harry is a wizard, but not that kind.
You're a wizard, Harry! Sorry, I had to.
And it's really, really fun, but he's a supernatural detective because he's a wizard. And he can communicate with the dead. He understands about all the different courts of vampires that exist. And there is a huge supernatural sect that happens on Earth, but no one wants to acknowledge it or have it exist. He initially works with the Chicago Police Department to solve crimes that are just way too suspicious or like supernatural-esque, or they can't figure out what the hell's going on. And he's like, oh yeah, this was a human sacrifice for X, Y, and Z. And they're like, what? And so he teams up with this female police officer, Karen, the best Karen of all Karens, even though that name is now dead. But their relationship's fantastic. You go into vampires, werewolves, black magic. There's just so much fun stuff. Some people don't necessarily love Dresden as a character because he has just really old school chivalry values where he doesn't like it when women get hurt kind of deal. But I just adore this series, and because it's such a long, extensive series, the character arcs and growth and where it goes is just spectacular. So yeah, I recommend that book. That's the last one I did. I'd really, really, really love to try and get Jim Butcher on a Geek Bomb book club stream so I can talk to him about the massive investment that I have made into his series. But honestly, if you are listening to audiobooks, listen to this series. It's a treat because James Masters narrates the series. And I've spoken a lot about narrators because they can make or break a book. James Masters is so good at narrating this book. He's not reading words, he's telling a story. And the way that he tells this story is so enriching that it's almost like borderline a radio play where you are immersed into what's happening. It is the best ever. Trisha.
Now I'm adding it to my Audible wish list. Thank you. You have now sold me. It's happening in this very moment.
And they're really easy reads. Listens. They're like 12 to 16 hours, so you can get through it quite easily. The first two, some I didn't notice this initially, but a lot of people are saying the first two are a little bit rough and he really picks up his stride from book three. But I think they're so great and it's just something to listen to, even if you're going to bed at night, because the way that he reads, you're just like, nah, it's a happy place.
What's the first book?
The first book should be called Stormfront. In fact, I don't know if you want to read it, but I got it.
I don't know if I will have time. But maybe when we have our socially distanced game night, you can give it to me and I'll see if I can make time.
Yeah, you know what? Any other book, yes, but I think for this one, you've got to listen to it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you definitely sold me on the spike. And also, I love how many callbacks we've had this episode so far. Like, everything's just come in full circle today.
That's true.
It's
yeah.
good. It's officially my wish list.
Amy, tell us about Good Feminism.
All right. So, audiobooks. I also listened to this one. This is now my third audiobook that I've ever listened to. And I realized that for me personally, I like listening to non-fiction audiobooks. If they're fiction, I like to read them. And if it's a comic, I like to read it, or a graphic novel. But yeah, I think it was very eye-opening. It's about 6-7 hours, and it is read by Mickey Kendall, who is the author. And I love how much she really just like goes into each part of feminism. So basically, the idea is that feminism has been primarily pushed forward by white women, and women of color kind of get left in the background. And the idea that there's so many other issues that people don't associate with feminism that very much are. Like, usually when you think of feminism, it's like, yeah, equal pay and like rights, like, you know, reproductive rights. And that's part of it, yeah. But there's a lot of other issues. So hunger is a feminist issue. Having good schools, that's a feminist issue. Like, healthcare is definitely a feminist mm-hmm. issue. There's so many of them. I have a few quick quotes from it, because yeah, I don't have like the physical copy, which felt really weird for me, because I was like, no, this is something that I'd want to like write notes on or circle. But if I were to have this book and like circle everything that's important, I'd circle the whole book. So I guess it's a good thing that I don't have that, but it's great to be able to hear it again. So here's a few. For a movement that is meant to represent all women, it often centers on those who already have most of their needs met. For women of color, the expectation that we prioritize gender over race, that we treat the patriarchy as something that gives all men the same power, leaves many of us feeling isolated. There's nothing feminist about having so many resources at your fingertips and choosing to be ignorant. Nothing empowering or enlightening in deciding that intent trumps impact. So it's also, it made me think of growing up, having a single mom take care of me, and all the difficulties that we had financially. And even now, I mean, this book was released, I want to say, in February of this year. Mm-hmm. And Mickey Kendall went on NPR, which I was like, what are they going to say? But she actually was able to hit on a lot of points in the pandemic, which we've probably talked about this before. But the idea that sheltering at home isn't always safe for everyone right now. So it's like, well, okay, so how do we change that? It's like, well, it's not just saying like, yeah, we need to change that. Maybe like, let's offer shelters. It's like, no, you know what? Women and men, and everyone that are paying tax dollars are using their tax dollars to fund things. Don't you think that should help them? So like, you know, provide apartments if they don't feel safe where they are, to have a place to go. Because a lot of women can't escape where they are. And October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So
yes, it is.
There are so many layers. And I feel like, I know that sometimes it can be very frustrating or heavy to be like, you know what? I don't want to have to read this. And I totally understand. But in a way, it's kind of like, well, listen to this and then have your palate cleanser. Listen to this so that we can know what's going on and change the infrastructure, instead of just being like, well, people are poor, if they just need to take advantage of better opportunities. People don't have opportunities. You think about women and just anyone that doesn't have opportunities to be able to go and order, or just stay at home and order groceries. Why? Because sometimes groceries can't be delivered to you. Why? Because they don't take food stamps. Why? I don't know. You know, it's just all of these things, and they're way more connected than they're not. And if we help each other out and make sure that it's not just like, oh, we should do something about that and then leaving it behind. Or, yeah, like women, yeah, women of color, Black women, Asian women, Latinas, Latinx, like everyone, trans women, like there are just so many layers. And I feel like this was so, so informative and so, I mean, the entire time I was listening, I was like, wow, oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, and then just having to reflect on a lot of life experiences and be like, that's true. That's something that not a lot of people might know about. And then you just kind of assume that, well, I lived it, so people know about it. I recommend it. And I think that everyone, whoever you are, should listen to this book. And I would say it's cooler to listen to it because it feels like a fun, not fun, but like a lecture that you're interested in. Because I remember going to college and the lectures weren't always super interesting and insightful. But this one's very much like, please, I don't have your experiences. Tell me your experiences. Tell me like what you need us to do for us to be not just allies, but to be, there was another word for it.
Proactive?
To be that next. What?
Proactive?
No, there's a different word. Where it's like you're actively saying stuff that's like, no, that's great, but we need to actually step in front and say, hey, we have a lot of privileges here, and it's not enough to just be like, women need more. It's women of color need more. And that's like, it's intersectional activism in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just having everyone and just pushing them forward. And I don't know. I mean, I can't even begin to break down this entire book, except that it's probably, no, it is. It's one of the best books that I've ever listened to.
Whoa, that's a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, highly. And I know it's like, oh, well, Amy, how many books have you listened to or read? And by now, I feel like it's a good handful since I was a kid like that now. But it's like, it's important. And I think that with that, I mean, everyone should listen to this. Everyone. It's 6-7 hours. That's less than a week. That's less than like a night's sleep. If you were to listen to 1 hour of this a week, you'd be done.
Yeah, 7 hours. It's mm-hmm. just under 7 hours.
And a lot of people are doing, are reading things like this and doing research like this, especially since it's election season here in the United States, and understanding the intersectionality of how all of these different policies and systems that are in place affect each other. I think that's important for people to educate themselves. So solid rec, Amy.
Huzzah! Yeah, we can do it. Crap, you can't see it.
Also, PSA, everybody go vote. Make it happen. Do the thing. If you're in the United States, please vote. Research and vote.
3.5 hours. That's even half of that.
What is?
He's just not that into you. 3.5 hours. Oh, wow.
It's short. It's a quick read. Like I said, I've read it multiple times. And it's another one, kind of like Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, where the chapters are really short. So, like, chapter, he's just not that into you if he's married to someone else, would be, like, 3 or 4 pages or something. Like, you can bust through a chapter pretty quick or come back to a specific chapter pretty quick if you need a reminder, etc. I keep bringing up that chapter, like, I have dated a married man. I have not dated a married man, for the record. Just want to give that disclaimer. But I have had friends who did the thing where they were like, well, they got married really young and didn't know any better, and I'm the first person they ever really loved, and excuse, 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 excuse. And the book's like, look, if you were the exception and not the rule, then they will fight to have you, and they will leave their current situation and no longer be married to someone else if that's the actual case. But if that's not the actual case and they're remaining in their marriage, they're just not that into you. They might be into you, but they're probably not that into you.
Also, don't go for married people because that's home wrecking and that's really shit.
Good call.
If you like money, Battleground is nearly 16 hours. So if you want more bang for your buck.
Okay.
There you go.
Woot woot. I love it.
Those. We are moving on to question time. Bombs away Q&A. Amy has sourced questions on Geek Bombs Patreon for us for Power Up and Power Down. Amy, hit us with some of these questions.
All right. Yeah. And this one's from patreon.com /geekbomb. Yeah. Okay. Ollie Morrison asked, after Alexandria Ocasio, after Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez streamed Among Us on Twitch, what other unlikely celebrities or people of power would you like to start streaming, and what game would you like to see them play? She streamed, I think it was two nights ago, she played Among Us.
Mm-hmm. I know, I was so bummed Felicia Day wasn't on the stream. Felicia, tweeted right away, like, please let me be a part of this. And then I didn't see her on it. But Dr. Lupo was on. That was cool. That's the only person I kind of know.
Well.
Who was?
Hassan.
Oh, I don't know Hassan personally. But, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I thought it was awesome that it happened. But, yeah, who else would you like to stream that's so unlikely to stream?
They're not unlikely, but I would love to play online games with Henry Cavill. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. It's not unlikely, though. I mean, he already streamed himself building a PC. It's only a matter of time. We'll get Henry Cavill on there pretty quick.
All I want. That's all I want. My mom would never do it. She's a person of power in my life.
Aww. And Twitch, don't forget to get your questions in there too if you have any questions for Bombs Away Q&A. Yeah, who would I'm trying to think of like people that would just be fun or funny to see them game. Who?
Florence Pugh. Wouldn't that be cool? She is so lively whenever she makes her Instagram stories of just like making food. She's just so chill. I think it'd be so fun to play something with her. Anything.
Pew crew.
Yeah, Pew Patrol.
Pew crew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Nathan Fillion. I'd love to see him start a Twitch channel.
What's he up to these days?
Is my not being Nathan Drake.
Yeah. Well, when an idea takes 15 years to happen, yeah.
Although I will say, in case y'all didn't see it, the picture that Tom Holland released of himself as Nathan Drake from the new Uncharted movie looks great. I was very pleasantly surprised.
I'm interested to see, because I don't think I've ever really seen him not be Peter Parker. So I want to know what kind of acting changes he makes to become someone else. Exactly.
What's that movie that's super popular that he's in right now?
The Devil Wins All the Time.
The
really long title one.
I heard he's really good in that. So that might be a good way also to see him not as Peter Parker. But yeah,
Pattinson's is that in that as like a pervy priest, and I don't need to see that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Who is?
Robert Pattinson is a pervy priest.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's what that movie was about.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, thanks.
I don't know that I can watch another one of those.
With shady secrets. Yeah, all that stuff. You know, movies that just want to make you feel a little uncomfortable. I don't need that in my life.
Then don't watch the Epstein doc series.
Damn.
It will make you uncomfortable.
Okay. I've watched like 21 seasons of Law and Order SVU, though.
Okay. How's that?
It's nice because there's always a hero, but they paint police as the hero. But Olivia Benson, she cares.
I have not watched any of it.
Amy,
do we have another question?
We do. This one's by Thierry Fournier. I've been doing a Spooktober Halloween movie marathon, one Halloween-themed movie a day. What is your not-hardcore horror favorite Halloween-themed movie? So, like, Beetlejuice, Hocus Pocus, Nightmare Before Christmas, Addams Family.
Okay, don't give examples that are all my answers. Okay. How about that, Thierry?
I don't really like any of the ones that you said until you said Adam's Family. And I was like, I like that one.
Wait.
She's better than one.
Hold on. Time out. You don't like Beetlejuice, Hocus Pocus, or Nightmare Before Christmas?
I've never seen Hocus Pocus, and I've never seen Nightmare Before Christmas, and I have no interest in doing so.
Hocus Pocus.
Okay, Hocus Pocus is good, if not slightly problematic. It is slightly problematic, but it's good.
Maybe I saw it when I was 9 once at a vacation. Mm-hmm.
Nightmare Before Christmas is fantastic. So good.
Have you noticed that the two Burton movies, I'm like.
So good. And Beetlejuice? You don't like Beetlejuice?
You don't like it. You don't like Tim Burton? Burton. That's why. Okay.
I liked, but like, it's just
a level. I wasted her hands.
It's just a level of weird that I don't connect entirely to.
Wow.
So did you do the Burton challenge on TikTok? You know where the
things. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. I'll do that on my TikTok. Follow me on TikTok.
Nightmare Before Christmas is so good. We're actually just getting ready to show it to Logan for the first time this year, I think.
The Nightmare Before Christmas. So Christmas is in the title. Surely it's a Christmas movie?
It is both a Halloween and a Christmas movie.
No, it can't be because they're different dates.
No, it is both a Halloween and a Christmas movie, which is why when you go to Disneyland, Haunted Mansion is decked out like Nightmare Before Christmas from October all the way through and after Christmas. It is both a Halloween and a Christmas movie.
Can chat dispute that, please?
Chat.
I know someone mentioned Casper. Casper's great, the one with Bill Pullman. And I would also recommend Practical Magic with Sandra Bullock, Nicole Kidman, someone else. I don't remember the other person. Those are great. Great, not horror-y Halloween movies.
Good ones.
What's Sally Ragdoll?
Where? Oh, Sally! Oh, you would make a good... Sally is the female protagonist in Nightmare Before Christmas. They're saying you would make a good Sally if you ever watched it. Sally is a ragdoll. Yes. And it's claymation. Like, there's so much. And thank you. Chat says it's totally both. Thank you, chat. Halloween and Christmas should be separate, but in the movie, it's both. Says Mikey likes it. 100% yes. Do you know it's a musical? Echelon asks. Did you know it's a musical, Maud? Okay. I'm still not interested. Okay.
Well, would that make you more interested, though, if it was... Yeah.
I mean, we all know how much you love Cats, so... Which, oh my god, speaking of, I finally saw Cats.
It's so... But...
The story
didn't make sense. And Terry, the animation was amazing. You did everything you were asked to do. Terry worked on it. The stage play did not resonate to a movie.
Well, you know, it wasn't the stage play at all, though. They changed like everything from the stage play.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
I just remember being 10 minutes in going, I have no idea what's happening. You are just telling me about some sort of jelly toe.
The Jellicle Cats.
But that didn't set it up enough for me. And I was like, I don't understand. So I just became severely alcoholic for the next hour.
The funny thing about watching that movie for me is it's Nate's favorite musical of all time, the stage play. Oh. And it is my least favorite musical of all time, the stage play. So I have taken one for the team and gone to see it with my husband, knowing how much he loves it before. And when we heard there was a movie, I was like, we have to go see this together. And Nate right away was like, they're going to ruin it. I don't want to see it. Like, he was like, the movie's going to be horrible. I don't even want to see it. I love the play. I don't want to see the movie. So that was Nate's take on it, which is why we didn't see it in theaters. We were in Pennsylvania over Christmas when all of you guys were all going to see it as groups. I would have loved to have gone and seen it as a group with friends.
I wouldn't have remembered it, but yeah.
That's true. You had a very nice time. But which I think honestly is the way that you have to see that movie now that I've actually seen it. And so we waited until it came out and we decided we weren't going to pay for it. We needed to be able to see it for free streaming. That's how we were going to watch Cats. It's the only way. So we watched it, and Nate was upset about all the things they changed from the play, which is what he assumed his feelings would be. He thought they ruined a lot of characters by changing their stories and changing their tone. And the thing that you have to realize about the play is it's mostly a dance show. It's like you're going to see a dance ensemble.
Well,
they're just in Cats costumes. Yeah. So
she was a ballerina.
Sure, but she's not the main character in the play. She's like a tiny little character that has no lines.
But she's the main one in this one.
In the movie. But yeah, cool. So it's like when you're going to see a dance production at a theater, that's a very different thing than them putting a weird storyline on. Like, there is a pseudo through line, but it's mostly a dance show. to the movie, which tried to put a storyline on it, and it was not great, I will say. Although, I think if I was highly intoxicated and laughing with friends, it could have been awesome.
I sang Memories, even though I only know the one word. being Memories. That's it.
And I have to say, the last tour of it that came through LA, I liked that version of Memory better.
Like, what did they change?
Huh?
What did they change?
Oh, the woman's voice was just incredible. Like, and her portrayal of it, like, you could feel it in her. And it's different when it's live, too. It's like, you know, that live energy and going to a live concert versus seeing one recorded. It's just, it's different. But yeah, I finally saw it. And I just the whole time was like, I couldn't.
What a fucking trip. What a trip.
What a trip.
What a trip. I was so confused the whole time. I didn't know what to expect, and then it still went above and beyond.
Well, the show itself doesn't make any sense anyway. Like, the stage play, the whole storyline is, these are Jellicle cats, let's introduce them to you one at a time. And then at the end, they send off one of the cats in a weird death cult ceremony. And that's it. That's the whole ceremony, is, let me introduce you to a bunch of cats, and we've named ourselves Jellicles. There's no story other than that. So the movie at least tried to give it a story with the ballerina cat and then the weird pirate thing.
There was a, like, pirate thing?
In the movie.
I don't remember a pirate.
They tried to give it a story, but there's really no story. Like, we took friends of ours when we went to see Cats Musical when it came through to LA, the theater. We took friends, and they were so funny because we're, like, at intermission, and they're like, okay, so I feel like we must have met all the cats by now. What are they going to do? And I was like, nope, we're just meeting them. This is just 3 hours of meeting different cats. Don't expect anything to really happen. And you'll meet more cats. We have more cats to meet in Act Two. But that being said, I also don't love this musical the same way my husband does. He could probably. But he concurred. He was like, just don't look for a plot. Just be here to appreciate the lights and the costumes and the dancing. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Well, good on you. That could be our time. I feel like we're considerably over today.
We are, but I want to take one Twitch question from Valishen. Yeah. Which was the better movie, The Last Airbender or Cats? I haven't seen The Last Airbender, so I can't comment on that.
I couldn't finish The Last Airbender. I was watching it on a plane, and I tried to walk out, but I would have died and taken the whole plane down with me. Still tempted to do so. At least in this case, because it was in a movie theater, I stayed. But I got so obliterated drunk that I don't remember the second half of existing in the movie.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Godless Rebel says Airbender at least made an effort. I think a lot of people made an effort on Cats, and that's what makes it such a sad outcome.
Because, at what stage didn't the director, just stop and think? Just stop and think. That's all.
Nate.
I would have liked to talk to the people that loved it. That's what I wanted.
It was really funny watching it with my husband, though, who was
Gerogosa loves it. Anthony Carboni loves it.
They also both love it in the same way that you love cult classics because they're really bad.
I'm talking about the people that love it because, they love it. That was really good.
It was funny watching it with my husband, who loves the musical so much, because, 2 seconds into Rebel Wilson, he's like, they completely changed Jenny Any Dots. And he's like,
That's where I lost the plot. That's where the straw that broke the cockroach's back.
Ew, no, what?
Nate was so upset they ruined Jenny Any Dots.
Yeah, I hated that part. I hated it so much. I hated it so much. She can't sing. It's not Australia's treasure. Take her back.
Everything was hilarious to me about it.
We gotta move on.
So thank you, everybody, for your questions, both on GeekBomb Patreon and in Twitch chat. You guys are amazing. We have gone on way too long, and we got to go so we can record Power Down and get everybody off to the rest of their day. But I appreciate you all so much. thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, bye guys.
Bye. Okay, but just kidding, bye, because I want to take a moment real quick to thank, oh my goodness gracious, Nathan, thank you for the resub, you're amazing. Thank you to all the followers and new folks who are here today. There were some YouTube subscribers today. Thank you, thank you. KingBros49, thank you for gifting 2 subs. You're an amazing human being, and I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your generosity. And welcome to the Dragon Riders, to the folks who are new subs. And, yeah, welcome to all the folks who are new followers. The Discord is completely open if you want to join and hang out in the Discord. We do have a power-up channel there, as well as Geek Bomb's Discord is completely open, and you can go hang out there as well.
Not completely.
So that is it. We don't do notifications during the show for this show, so I want to make sure to always give my thanks at the end. All right, guys. The next time I will be live is tomorrow. I'm going to squeeze in a Baldur's Gate 3 stream because I'm addicted and it's got to happen.
What time?
I don't know. When I get my work done. It's a when I get my work done. So in the afternoon, probably 3. I'm going to say probably
tomorrow,
3 p.m.
Tomorrow's my day off and I'm probably going to be streaming around the same time.
Ooh. Well, I mean, if we party up, we have to start it all over though again, right?
No, I don't think so, really. I thought you could just get your character and team up.
Where you are in the story? Let's do some research, because if not, yeah, just join my party. That would be great. So yeah, so tomorrow at 3. And then tomorrow evening, I am going to be playing some Among Us with Alana Pierce and some other female streamers at 8 p.m. Pacific time. So tune in for that as well. Anything you guys need to plug before we go?
I'll be streaming this weekend. Twitch. Yep, we're all streamers now. We got the stream thing. I usually stream over the weekend, my weekend, which is Friday, Saturday. I think this afternoon I'm going to be playing some Among Us with Vince Casso, if you want to jump in on that. I'm speaking to Alana Pierce tonight, so I might try and get in on that. What else is happening? Fungeons Monday nights on Twitch.
Mm-hmm. Godless Rebel. Thank you. We just linked Amy's, and Maud is, her Twitch is Geek Bomb. I asked, what's Maud's Twitch channel? I'll do it now. There we go. Perfect. And linked in chat. Awesome.
Hey.
Okay, well, thanks, everybody. We gotta run. Bye.